Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Time to go blitzing all around the Beltway as we kick off the second half of Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan with you until 2 today. Chad Dukes versus the world at that time. We will be covering the Redskins and the Blitz, but we start you off with the baseball team. Splitting a four-game series with Atlanta, you got to love Game 1 when they pour on 13 runs despite getting in at 4 in the morning, and the response in Game 3. Jesse, how should we feel about the overall four games, though? 2-2 against the Braves, no ground gained.
Yeah, I think in a vacuum, you know, in any other time of the season, you'd feel pretty good about that. I mean, this is the division-leading Braves. They're one of the best teams in the NL. The Nationals are in that class, but I think this series showed that these teams are pretty evenly matched. I mean, each team takes a lopsided win. Each team takes a close contest, and you kind of split hairs and go from there. I think given the time of year and also the fact the Nationals are still chasing the Braves, obviously, in the National League East, we're sort of conditioned to say they should have gained more ground, they should have made up more, and that this weekend was sort of a missed opportunity, which to some extent it was. But at the same time, I think splitting on the road against a really good team, that's not something to turn your nose up to at all.
Jesse, they want bullpen help, but they don't want to pay for it in terms of money over the luxury tax or prospects. I guess good luck with that. What are they going to do?
I mean, the prospects are going to have to come out if they want it, because the fact of the matter is every contending team right now, or just about every contending team, needs bullpen help. So if you're going to put a package up that could stand up to one by the Red Sox or the Dodgers or the Brewers or the Phillies or Braves, you're going to have to eventually, you know, pay up in prospects. But on the money front, the Nationals are targeting guys that are in their price range. They have about a $4 million cushion probably before the luxury tax, you know, based on loose projections. And, you know, guys like Shane Green, Sam Dyson, Jake Dietman, names that have come up, you know, in recent rumors and that they are definitely interested in. Those guys cost around $2 million, a little bit less this year when their salaries are prorated for the rest of the season. So I think in terms of actual paying the salaries, the Nationals can do this. In terms of acquiring the players, that's another story, and they're going to have to figure out what they can part with here so they can put packages that stand up to those of other teams.
Jesse, Max Scherzer is all that matters to me right now. We have thought he was going to pitch about four times when he didn't pitch, and everyone keeps saying, it's okay, Sean Kelly got a shot once and told him it's going to be fine.
It's not okay.
And now Sean Kelly's hurt, by the way, and not going to be able to pitch, who's the reason that we're all supposed to be calm. What is going on with Scherzer?
He'll throw an extended bullpen today. I think if that goes well, he's on track to start. I think that will be telling how he comes out of this bullpen.
Start when, though?
He threw 15. I mean, you'll put him on track for Thursday. He throws an extended bullpen 3 days before his starts. So if this, you know, if he feels good coming out of this and then there has no setbacks in the coming days, he could be ready as soon as Thursday. That's what Dave Martinez said he was hopeful for. Mike Rizzo yesterday in Atlanta said he was, quote unquote, reasonably confident that timeline would work out. And then from there, I mean, if you're looking at it from a competitive standpoint, I'd say if he is ready, bump him back a day and start him against the Dodgers and the Braves instead of wasting him against the Rockies, who are really struggling right now. But, I mean, the timeline right now is end of this week. But, again, we'll have a better picture once he comes out of this bullpen today and how his back feels. But, I mean, it's definitely lingered longer than expected, and it's a concern. It certainly is.
Jesse, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it as always.
Yep, anytime, guys. Thanks.
See you, man. There he goes. Redskins, please, Tommy. We got Chris Russell to chat about the Redskins. He's standing immediately to my left. Russell, training camp this week. Two-fifths, that's 40% according to my math, of the offensive line in flux. Their two best offensive linemen unsettled here, one in terms of contract, the other, I guess, kind of in terms of contract. Trent Williams, Brandon Scherff, give us the latest. What do you expect?
Yeah, I mean, Scherff will be there, so that's not a question. They technically have control of him for at least two more years, meaning the fifth-year option of his rookie deal this year. And, of course, the franchise tag next year, which would be around $15 million. Ultimately, without knowing specifically what they're planning on doing and how low their offers are, and I've heard that, as has been reported, Aaron Hawksworth reported it last week, To me, none of these reports surprise me. I think ultimately he will wind up playing this year out. I don't know if he'll make it to the franchise tag. They better get him signed because I don't think Trent Williams is here for any more than a year. And you have to have kind of that foundation of your offensive line to build around.
As far as the rest of the offensive line goes, take Williams, take Sheriff out of the equation for a second. Everyone's been talking about them. How do you feel about Moses staying healthy, playing right tackle?
Yeah.
Roullier coming off of last year, the left guard position, which still is up in the air.
Right. I mean, Roullier played every snap last year and continues to get better, although he's clearly, as they found out last year, a much better center than he is a left guard. So we start with that. I think between the combination of Wes Martin, maybe Eric Flowers, depending on what happens with Trent and Jaron Christian, between Flowers, again, maybe Wes Martin and Piersbacher, I think they'll be much better at guard, at left guard, than they have been, where they virtually ignored the position. But I don't know. I don't know if it'll be great. And then you look at a guy like Moses, who, you know, and I know you say this, and I've been saying the same thing for somehow he plays every game, but he's rolling around half dead on the floor.
He leaves every game. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, you always worry about a guy like that. That being said, if they don't have Trent at the start of the year, say he misses week one, like Aaron Donald style a couple years ago, look, obviously, it goes without saying, they are at a major, major weak spot. They have to have Sheriff, Moses, and again, Roullier healthy and ready to go. If Trent's back, at least you could say, well, all right, we can maybe absorb a blow because we do have Christian, we do have Flowers, we finally do have some decent, legitimate depth.
I'm actually higher than most on their linebacker spot. I think they're going to be okay. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I think Bostic, if he ends up staying healthy, he's never been a problem with the production. It's been injury with him. I think that could be a nice find. I like Deion Hamilton. I like Holcomb. I think they've got bodies. They're Harvey Clemens, third down guy. To me, this safety thing is the – you guys didn't notice this? You didn't notice this glaring weakness, this hole, this leak that's coming out of your defense that's going to undo all the good work here? That, to me, is unsettled, and I see their free agents visiting other teams,
yeah,
and I'm wondering what they're doing.
Yeah, Trey Boston visiting the Giants, and, you know, if you believe Rappaport, and, you know, I guess we have to, it looks like a signing could happen there. Here's what I would say. Last year, I mentioned the left guard position. They completely ignored that, didn't address it, didn't draft, didn't free agent, none of that stuff. Had a terrible plan. This year, with the free safety spot next to Landon Collins, I can kind of get it. I can kind of understand it because they so overinvested in Landon Collins. Leadership, character, desire and want to be here, skill, all of that. I can kind of understand them taking a chance with Monte Nicholson, who we know if he's healthy and if he's not punching people out in Loudoun County, he's pretty good. And then Troy Apke and DeShazer Everett and whoever else comes into the mix. So I can kind of understand it a little bit better than, say, the plan comparatively to last year at left guard. And I know those are two separate situations and positions, but I hope you understand where I'm coming
from. I got you.
Chris Russell, boys and girls, on the Redskins. That is your Beltway Blitz. Couple of teams jammed into one segment. All the intel you need on the Skins. A few days away from the start of training camp. And the Nationals, who get home today to start a homestand against the Rockies and the Dodgers. More on the Nationals next. How should we feel about splitting a four-game series with Atlanta? How do we feel about Max Scherzer moving forward? You're listening to G&D.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Day to take you back through the four games the Nats just played with the Braves. Series started on Thursday. Didn't look great before the game because they got in at 4 in the morning, very little rest. But then they exploded for 13 runs on 16 hits. Top of the order, Trey Turner, 2 hits. Adam Eaton, 2 hits. Rendon, 3 hits. Ryan Zimmerman was 2 for 5. Brian Dozier was 2 for 3 and scored a couple times. Victor Robles, 2 hits. And the story of the game was Steven Strasburg, who wasn't very good on the mound, but he had 3 hits, including a homer, and he drove in 5 in a memorable game The Nats won going away 13-4. All was well with the world.
It felt good, and it was good. It was the, you know, Braves had come in, dropping a couple in a row, I believe, or I think they lost four or five entering the series. And you go, let's capitalize. We're playing great. They're not. No apologies. Let's start knocking people around. You know, you got to see their ace once, but nobody else in the rotation was really killing it. Let's get some bully ball going. Let's send a message to the NL East. Let's send a message to the rest of baseball that the Nationals aren't just getting fat on some bad teams. We're going to beat up the Braves, too. Great beginning.
The second game of the series, the Nats were very flat in. Didn't score a run until the sixth inning, and in fact, they had one run as of being down to their 27th out. They were down 3-1 in the game. Patrick Corbin pitched and was actually fine. A lot of pitches, got out of a jam in the first, and that taxed him for the rest of the game. So he ended up allowing 8 hits, 2 runs earned in 5 frames. The bullpen came on, and in the sixth gave up a run, charged to Tanner Rainey, who gave up a couple of hits. Tony Sipp helped him get out of that. Wander Suero was marvelous in the seventh. He was great twice in this series, as a matter of fact. The issue became Fernando Rodney came on in the eighth and looked very, very good. Fernando Rodney, throughout his entire career, has never really been a two-inning guy. Davey Martinez was tasked with a decision because in the top of the ninth, after Rodney shut the Braves down in the eighth, with 2 outs, Ryan Zimmerman got aboard, and then Victor Robles hit an incredible 2-run game-tying homer. And it was one of the shots heard around D.C. It was awesome. Great moment. One of those things that happens a couple times a season that, for whatever reason, over the last couple months, the Nats have had happen 6 or 7 times now. So he hits the unbelievable 2-run home run, and it's now 3-3. But you've got to go to the ninth inning. Rather than pitching Sean Doolittle in the bottom of the ninth, because he's the closer, and we're on the road, and you can't use your closer in a tie because it's not a save situation, and then who's going to pitch in the save situation? It's how managers think. It's flawed, it's ridiculous, but that's how they think. Here's how you should think. I got to get to the 10th to worry about that. I got to make sure the Braves don't score in the bottom of the ninth or the game's over.
Or the game's over.
I got to get my lineup back up in the 10th inning. Now, he could have double switched. Otherwise, Sean Doolittle would have only pitched the bottom of the ninth because he would have been due up second, and then you lose him because you could probably have to pinch hit in the 10th. I guess you could have just had him stand there, take 3 pitches, and had him throw in the 10th as well. But rather than going to the closer and saying the save is right now, he went back to Rodney for a second inning who didn't have it. 4 batters reached, never brought in Doolittle, including against Freddie Freeman, which was malpractice. I thought the whole bottom of the ninth was terrible for Davey Martinez. You know, in my timeline, you had people saying to fire him, which is stupid. In my timeline, you had people saying he cost him the game, which is less stupid, but still probably not completely correct.
He didn't make the right call.
He made a lot of bad decisions, and he made bad calls that led to them having a ninth inning that cost them a run. Now, if you think that scoring once for 8 innings didn't cost them the game, I'd say that you're probably wrong. But regardless, pin that one on Davey Martinez. That's probably fair enough if you want to. It was 1-1 after 2 games.
So then when you look at this one, it's frustrating. You touched on the 2 things that you just go, damn, missed opportunity, right? I know Julio Teheran's having a nice season, but you can't let him shove it on you like that. And a bullpen that's not
he's
particularly
good. He's pretty good, though. Been
an all-star. He's good. He's having a good year.
That annoys me less than when Kevin Gausman does it.
Well, we'll get to that when we come up to it. But I'd love to scratch a run or two across and have a different chance. I'd like that Robles homer to be the game winner instead of, now we got back even and you're kind of doomed. There aren't any good options at this point. It was either to burn your closer, quote unquote, or to me, though, there were less bad options than having Rodney go a second inning.
Right.
I can't believe my 42-year-old that was off the scrap heap, that's thrown well to this point, by the way, he's been fine, but doesn't really do 2 innings. That's my best option. I'll go down with somebody else right
well,
there.
Well, and if you want to start the inning with Rodney, I happen to be against doing that, but I think that if you're Davey Martinez and you want to start the inning with Rodney against a righty and see if he gets that guy out quickly or he gets him to pop up or he strikes him out, let's see how long this goes. That, to me, is not the end of the world. To not have had Sean Doolittle ready for the lefty, Freddie Freeman, in that inning, I just can't fathom. And to not have had him ready to go, if need be, an out or two there is kind of crazy to me, to be completely honest with you. So here we are. You lose that game. It's 1-1. I also would manage that game differently. I wouldn't go back to my old rules of closer, ninth inning versus 10th inning. It's the Braves.
Yeah.
You got a chance to. This is a 2-game swing in the division here. You win this one, you're plus one, they're minus one. The other way is they've now gained basically 2 games on you. You got to leave your book in the office at that point and manage for right now, this second, this inning, give yourself the best chance to get back to the plate in the 10th. And who knows? Maybe you score 4 runs in the 10th inning.
You're allowed
and,
to.
And Matt Grace can get through the next inning only giving up 3 runs.
Tournament-style baseball when it's a game that matters that much, right? You've got to find a way to get to the next inning instead of saying, oh, well.
So then the third game of the series, Saturday night, I had a bunch of texts from all kinds of Nats fans in different factions of my life all day long on Saturday. Some of them my best friends, some of them people I know through work, what have you, all of whom are giving their opinions on Davey and on the bullpen and on this and that. And most of them are assuming that the weekend's about to go poorly, that the Nats are about to lose this game and giving them no chance. Well, they come out and they fall behind 1-0 in the first. You know, eye roll. You go, oh, no, here we go. They rally to tie the game on a Matt Adams homer in the fourth, and then they knock an all-star 10-game winner, Mike Soroka, out of the game after a 3-run fifth inning. His pitch count was low. He was cruising. They just kind of moved the line. Good at bats, some walks, some hits. They come through with runners in scoring position. So he's out of the game, 4 runs, 6 innings. He's outpitched by Aníbal Sanchez, 5 innings, 3 runs. And then the bullpen was tremendous. 2 innings, scoreless. Wander Suero, take your cap off. A out in the eighth from Fernando Rodney led to 2 outs from Sean Doolittle, and then a full 9th inning from Doolittle, who pitched an inning and 2/3, having not thrown for a full week, getting 2 strikeouts. Martinez going to him, probably when he didn't want to, the opposite of the night before, and it worked to perfection. I thought that was the win of the series, even though they scored 13 in the first game.
Yeah.
To bounce back with a pitching matchup of Aníbal Sanchez against a lot of guys that know him well, who he pitched with last year, against an all-star that no one's gotten to, that no one can hit, who's a Cy Young candidate, and to win that game 5-3 to take the series lead and to not be at risk of losing 3 out of 4 was huge.
Number one against the number four. Just right there on paper, it doesn't look very good. And as you touched on it, that was a big boy team win against a bullpen that was taxed the previous day. Sanchez goes 5, and you go, whoa, but they're able to do it, as you kind of touched on. That was a huge win.
And then yesterday was just they
zero energy, just deflated.
They didn't have a lot left in the tank at the end of the road trip. And on paper, Joe Ross starts at this point. I'm kind of banking on an L.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's incredible is after his bad first inning, 3 hits and 2 runs, which I am anticipating. I thought there would be an inning like that in the second and the third, and then he'd be taken out at 6-0. He settled in. He pitched into the sixth. He allowed just 3 earned runs over 8 hits. He struck out 6. He actually gave them a chance. The problem was their offense.
Mm-hmm.
1 run on 6 hits. Turner 0 for 4. Eaton 0 for 4. Rendon 0 for 4.
0 for 16 from that top 4, yeah.
I mean, not one of them had a hit. Adams, who came in for Zimmerman, went 0 for 3 in the game. Ryan Zimmerman, who'd been dealing with plantar fascia, was out for 2 months running down the line, hurt his foot, so who knows if he's going to miss time or how much. Could be headed back to the injured list. You got to feel for Zim because his body's just abandoning him at this point.
Yeah, it sucks. Just does. It's not fun. The grind of rehabbing for an injury like that, too, by the way, which is, it's been referred to as a ticking time bomb, meaning like something else is going to happen at some point, and he works so hard to get back, and all it took was, you know, sprinting down the first baseline that time, and that's that.
Of their 6 hits, 1 was from a pitcher, by the way.
Yeah.
Ross had a base hit in the game. So it was their lineup turned in 5 hits and a run, and that's just not going to be enough. Doesn't matter who you're facing. Equally as maddening was that it was Kevin Gausman for the Braves, who they knocked out of a game with 8 runs and an inning plus in Atlanta not long ago. Gausman got a lot of early loud outs, just scorched right at people, line drive base hits, and eventually it turned into bad at-bats and a lot of strikeouts, so you can't completely blame it on bad luck. That was certainly a theme early in the game. But they go 2-2 in the 4 games, so here's the question. How should we feel about the 4 games? We'll take your calls next. Also, what's going on with Max Scherzer? Are you confident we will see him within the next few days on this homestand? 800-636-1067, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Kind of agreed that 2-2 would be a no harm done. Certainly no success, nothing gained here, but you kind of pick up where you left off after that.
Right.
Clearly you'd have 4 fewer games, meaning you have 10 total against the Braves the rest of the way. Still plenty. How do you feel about the 2-2?
It's a missed opportunity to a degree, and I think the last point you just made is instrumental in my thinking on this. In other words, if all things are equal, and this is a different year where the Nats are up 6.5 games or up, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 games at this point, and the Braves are trying to chase them as the young upstart, then you go, yeah, time's on your side. You could just run out the clock here, and eventually the Braves run out of games, run out of chances to directly influence you. Well, the Nationals this time are the ones chasing. The Nationals have to make up all the ground. Now you need more help. You still got 10 more games with those Braves, but you can sort of see how these series are going to go. They're pretty evenly matched, these two teams. You know, each is going to kind of surge ahead for a brief moment. Well, that's all well and good if the Nationals weren't coming back from a 19-31 start. Their first 50 games are so horrendous that they're climbing out of that pit. So an opportunity to take three out of four, which they had in their hands, I would say I can lose one of those two games that they lost and feel okay about it. It's something of a missed chance. It's not catastrophic. I'm not woe is me-ing. I'm not saying the season's over to fire anybody or anything's terrible. You just kind of go, you had a pretty good shot here with Kevin Gausman, a guy that's not very good, whose ERA is north of six for a reason. And in Braves land, they're going, what the hell's wrong with him? He went from opening day starter to disaster. He got a chance to make some hay. It's frustrating that it ended up kind of going the way that it did. But overall, you would certainly take it given the things that happened to the Nationals during that trip.
Yeah, I feel okay about it, to be honest with you. Look, Max Scherzer didn't pitch. Four games without Max Scherzer. You split with the team that's above you in the division. Context does matter.
Sure.
And I can look into a lot of wrinkles like, hey, they started 1-0 and then they lost the next game. They were 2-1. They lost the next game. And there's a lot of ways you can find that four games, a 2-2 split, probably not perfect. I feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
I feel good. Because you had four games. One was started by your fifth starter. I guess you could call him that. In fact, I would say that.
Yeah, what are you going to call him?
Austin Voth is your fifth starter, and Eric Fetty's your sixth starter. Yeah. So Joe Ross is kind of your seventh starter.
Sort of Mr. Seven.
So one was started by your seventh starter, and the other was started by your fourth starter, who's been very good, but who I kind of view as a five and dive, like six and two runs is a great outing if he can give it to you. He's given you a lot of those lately. He's been marvelous since he came off the injured list, but he's not money in the bank per se. And you split those games? Yes. You had a 13-run game with 16 hits? Yes. Got in at 4 in the morning beforehand? I will take 2-2. The other part of this is Max Scherzer, though. We just mentioned you didn't have him. And this is something that me and Pete spent all of last week pretty much talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, when will we see him again? The news on Friday that came out after we were done on the air was that apparently Sean Kelly's been super helpful to Max in this process, or at least his sounding board, kind of his voice, in helping him, because he's a handful of days ahead of him in this process, by telling him what's going to happen. He's got the same bursa sac, whatever this weird diagnosis is. And so he had a cortisone shot. It took him 5 to 6 days, and he felt better. And I guess he told Max Scherzer the same thing. Well, Scherzer, sure enough, had the shot on Tuesday, came in on Saturday, as expected, felt a lot better. My only issue is, apparently Sean Kelly felt something now in his shoulder or
bicep.
Bicep. I don't know if it's related or isn't, but he's back hurt again. And we were told for a couple days, don't worry, this is what Sean Kelly's been saying. And now Sean Kelly's having a setback.
I love Sean Kelly. I do. Really cool dude. I'm a fan of his. I'll root for him wherever he goes.
He's our guy.
Yeah. Great dude. Taking injury advice from Sean Kelly would be like you taking weight loss advice from me. You'd be foolish to do that. Sean Kelly's been hurt a lot, and Sean Kelly's going to get hurt a lot. And again, I feel terrible saying this, but that's sort of what's happening. I need the fate of my franchise's superstar not to come down to an anecdote from Sean Kelly about how he felt a couple weeks ago. Everyone should be very concerned way more than they are about this. Again, the Nationals have lost the ability to have us take what they say at face value when it comes to injuries. Anthony Rendon playing, you know, sitting 7 of 8 games, restarting his disabled list clock, injured list clock, whatever you want to call it, 2 straight years, constantly doing this with them. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. He'll miss a day. Yes, it is that bad. Yes, it is that bad. He'll miss more than a day. You can't get this right. So when I hear Max Scherzer is experiencing any discomfort in any way, that's why. Now, last year, I was proven wrong when this neck thing that he had really was just a stiff neck, and he was able to make his, he missed a start, was pushed back, and then was fine. So fine, that's one in your column. You still don't have enough for me to not be extremely concerned when this discomfort has lasted longer than they thought. And he went and threw a 90-foot flat ground that they had to cut short, as far as I read. If I was reading the way the beat reporters were writing about it
correctly.
This
is something we talked about again last week when you were out, which was, I want to say that throwing session was on Thursday, ahead of that 13-run explosion and the 16 hits. And we came in on Friday and discussed that. And basically, I don't know if they cut it short or not. I don't know that that's true. But he was in clear discomfort. I think the word we were using, and I'd have to go back and listen, But me and Pete keep saying he grimaced, right? There was pain there. Mm-hmm. There was some type of, was he hurt? I don't know. But it wasn't right. They stopped the throwing session, presumably, right? You're not going to let him pitch through that. So we've had a couple of these now where you go, wait a sec. I thought we were going to be farther along. Carol Maloney actually called into the show on Friday because she talked with Max the previous weekend,
mm-hmm.
and she made an important clarification. Now, I kept saying that the team was referring to the fact that maybe he was going to throw Sunday out of the break against Philly. He didn't. Then Tuesday against Baltimore, he didn't. Then Saturday against Atlanta, he didn't. Then Sunday against Atlanta, he didn't. And obviously, the team never said any of those things. They never came out and listed him as a probable starter. But the things that were being said in press conferences that were being kind of told to the reporters was where the inference was coming from.
I see.
That maybe he'd get to go Sunday. He didn't.
That's an important Tuesday. Distinction, by the
yeah.
way, because as I'm reading this, you know, sort of, you know, every other night at the beach
kind of
or whatever.
Guessing.
Yeah, you're right. That's fair.
But that said, it's still, like, these are the most plugged in of all of us. These mm-hmm. are the people that are around the team all the time, that are talking to Max Scherzer and Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo, that are getting all the inside information. And they're saying, based on all those conversations they're having, he's probably going to pitch Sunday now. In fact, Max Scherzer told me at the All-Star game, when I interviewed him, I think he said the word Sunday. He said, well, we're just pushing me back to Sunday to be precautionary. So that was at least the original plan. But then the first thing you heard was, well, they're going to wait until Tuesday after the day off with the Orioles. I got a ticket to that game. Went and saw Austin Voth. Not as fun.
Mm.
Then after that,
with all due respect to the Voth family,
I think the reason they said Saturday was because that's when he was coming off the injured list.
Uh-huh.
So it was when he was eligible to pitch. So they assumed he'll pitch Saturday coming off the IL. That didn't happen either. But it's not like there's been, like, everyone's like, oh, no harm, no foul. If he comes back this week, not a big deal. We already missed him, and we had a chance to beat the Braves 3 out of 4, and if he was on the mound healthy, you probably would have. So it's not like you haven't suffered any here.
Yeah, this isn't
That's
nothing.
Already a problem.
Joe Ross is making starts. Now, this is a couple years ago. I'm excited about that. I'm not now. I've seen enough of what, you know, Joe Ross is a reliever. Now he got knocked around. Now he's a starter, giving up 6 runs a game at Fresno. Right now, it's not a great option. He's the organizational number 7 or 8. If everybody's healthy and available. This is now starting to cost you. It went from nothing to worry about to, well, he's missed one. Let's see what else happens. We're now on second and third turns through the rotation here, coming out of the All-Star break. It's a big deal to me. Until he's right, this isn't, you know, just I fouled the ball off my foot. I need a couple days. This is, you're not going anywhere without Max Scherzer throwing twice in a playoff series.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you get there.
My point all last week was it's a 34-year-old with a back issue. Who's a pitcher.
Yeah.
That sentence in and of itself should be petrifying.
Yeah, I know he defies logic, and we talked about this a bunch as he was putting up the greatest stretch of his Hall of Fame career. But, again, time is undefeated.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, an opportunity for you to win tickets to see the Nats take on the Dodgers at the start of next segment at 12:45. We will give you that chance. Next, you got to be listening right here on the Fan, and we'll tell you what superstar in the NFL apparently contemplated retirement this offseason.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
DC.com/contests. If you want to see the Nats, your best way to do so is to listen to this show every day at 12:45.
Dodgers series tickets. That's pretty bigly.
That is
bigly. That's a pretty good baseball team coming to town there.
The schedule coming up, by the way, for the Nats, even though they're now out of the division and out of the Braves, is not a whole lot more fun. Now, I'll say this. The Rockies have not been playing well at all.
They've been swooning.
However, that is a lineup that can rake.
Mm-hmm.
And you start this series against the Rockies, I believe Eric Fetty goes today. That's not the way we drew this up.
Is that what's happening today?
Well, it's his day to throw. Steven Strasburg's not available until tomorrow. Corbin the day after him. And then you kind of go back through the rotation again, obviously. So, yeah, I think it's a Fetty day. You push Voth back, obviously, with the issue he's dealing with. He's on the injured list. There's going to be some moves made today because I know they are calling up Michael Blazek from the minor leagues.
Is he still on a flight from Fresno?
I don't think so. He got with the team last night. He had a pretty terrible trip and travel to Atlanta, so he wasn't able to be activated for the game because that AAA affiliate in Fresno travel has not been easy on some of these guys. They had some flight cancellations or issues. But he should be on the roster today. I'm presuming that Kyle McGowan will get sent down, and I'm good on him for the rest of the year.
I feel fine about what I've seen there. I kind of have it categorized in my brain. I know what I know what my Kyle McGowan
experience
is like.
I know what you are. I know what you're not.
Yeah. you're not a big league reliever.
You're not a guy getting outs for me as this thing continues.
Hittable is the word I would say.
But 4 days against the Rockies. You could say, oh, they can't pitch, and you might be right. This lineup had better show up.
You got to win some 9-7 games here.
They are going to hit. They're going to score. Then the Dodgers are in town for three. Then the Braves for another three before the Diamondbacks. A playoff hopeful that gave you fits earlier this season. And the time that I expected to like take a deep breath and say, okay, finally, the schedule gets a little lighter. The Giants, three games. Those games are no longer cakewalks. They've won like 15 of their last 18. They're contenders all of a sudden. You get the Mets for three, who have been on an uptick, and then the Reds for three. All three are playoff hopefuls. They don't play a non-competitive team until their two-game series against the Orioles.
In late August.
August 27th.
Yeah.
That's the next time the Nats have a game against a team that is not a legitimate playoff contender.
Now, A, that's kind of what baseball is happening, right? Whisper quietly, we're in a year where only a handful of teams are not competing. Despite all the hand-wringing about tanking and teams bottoming out, there aren't that many terrible teams. If you look at the Central, right, the Reds are in last place, but there are only a handful of games out of first place. There's a bunch of teams that are bunched up. Everybody's okay. Only the Marlins in the National League are really and truly out of it, as you touched on. The Giants, who were terrible most of the year, all of a sudden are winning again, and maybe they won't trade Madison Bumgarner. The whole thing is it's a really strange season at this point. So you're right. There are no breaks in the schedule until you get to late August when it's Orioles for two more and then the Marlins for three. I mean, the Mets aren't particularly good, but you see the point. Nobody is a cakewalk at this stage. It's not the old days of the NL East where the Nationals would get fat by winning 75 games in the NL East and going 500 everywhere else.
At 1 o'clock, I want to get into a top 25 list that hit the internet today that had everybody up in arms, and I'm starting to think it's just fake. I think maybe I got duped.
Feels fake.
There's no way that it's real and credible. It has to just be photoshopped and fake. So we can get into that at the top of the hour in 10 minutes at 1 o'clock here on The Fan. But before we do that, saw this story a few minutes ago. Wanted to bounce this off of you. Odell Beckham Jr. says he was disrespected by the New York Giants and that he mulled retirement before he got traded to the Cleveland Browns. Remember the contract he signed from the Giants?
Yeah, the huge one?
You know, the $100 million contract.
Massive one.
Yeah, that one?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really feel that disrespectful to me, does it? You want to pay me that kind of money? You can pretty much say and do to me whatever you want.
Disrespected. You got to really be looking for disrespect. Now, you could be annoyed that they went from you're the future of the franchise to trading you shortly after giving you money. You can question Dave Gettleman for that. You could say that was an idiotic move.
But I thought he was saying he got disrespected. You know, before he became a Brown is when he was contemplating the retirement.
Yeah, that's the sense I have. When were you contemplating that? Before or after you signed your name on that piece of paper that guaranteed you lots of money?
Reading here from Jordan Renan, Beckham Jr. revealed in the new GQ cover story that he felt disrespected by the Giants when traded to the Cleveland Browns earlier this offseason and that things got so bad at times the past few years that he had contemplated stepping away from the game. So I guess his retirement threats were before the trade. That wide-ranging interview covered Beckham's happiness. He says he's happier now than ever. Rumors about him being gay. Have you heard that? I've never heard that before.
Whoa.
He said he found it humorous, adding, I have no problem with anyone's sexual orientation. His hair, the catch, the trade, and the Giants. I guess all covered in this GQ cover story. Beckham was drafted by the Giants in the first round in 2014. He is a mercurial personality, obviously. He goes on to say this, quote, my initial reaction was not disappointment. I felt disrespected. Like, after everything I've done for them, Beckham said in an interview, this is me being honest. This team has not been good for the last 6 years, period. Even the year we went to the playoffs and everyone was talking about this and that, and we went there and I didn't have a great playoff game. Don't get me wrong, I had a terrible game. But I left the game with 7 targets, and I'm supposed to be your number one receiver. I left the game with 7 targets. We lost. They scored 40 points. It's just all bad. I felt disrespected because I felt like I was the main reason at keeping that brand alive. They were getting primetime games, still a 5-11 team. Why? Because people want to see the show. You want to see me play. That's just real rap. I'm not sitting here like it's because of me. You're literally sitting here saying
you're saying
because
that. Aren't you saying that?
But let's just be real. He said it's because of me and then said, I'm not sitting here because of me. But let's just be real. That's why we're still getting primetime games. I felt disrespected. They weren't even man enough to sit me down and tell me to my face what was going on.
Very strange.
I get being blindsided by a trade, but wasn't he wanting to be traded? He hated it there.
He claimed he did. He hated it so much that he signed that deal. I think you touched on this very well, Grant.
He's just a strange cat.
He fits in the Antonio Brown mold of when everything's right and he wants to be there and his interests line up with yours, my God, it's fun. Throw him a hitch and it's a touchdown. You throw him a slant route and it's a touchdown. He can go deep. He can go short. He can run after the catch. He can catch in traffic. He's got great hands. He's everything that you would want. I covet this playmaking ability for a Redskins wide receiver because, frankly, I've never seen it. I've never had one. I've had great receivers. I had Art Monk. I had Gary Clark. They did completely different things. Beckham does everything under the sun. He's a superstar, a Hall of Fame caliber player. But whatever this is, just inventing slights from an organization that's paid you tons of money, that's so excited to have you, that puts you out on the front lines, right? That makes you the poster boy, the guy that everybody wants to come see, the primetime games and stuff he alludes to sort of invent these slights in your mind. You have to wonder where it comes from. Is somebody, you know, putting poison in his ear? Or is somebody just sort of enabling his feelings this way? Are they always there, this insecurity? Just seems like so much to deal with. That's the phrase I come back to. So much to deal with. And you deal with it because he's excellent. The instant he's not excellent, you'll have a Terrell Owens situation where a guy could still play and not get a gig. You'll have a Dez Bryant situation where a guy could still play, but he can't get a gig because it's no longer worth the squeeze.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, top of the hour, a list that is making the rounds that may or may not actually be real. People were up in arms about a top 25 all-time list that was just bafflingly funny. You're listening to the Fan.
Grant and Danny for our pals at Window Nation. These guys are awesome at what they do. The intense summer heat is back. It is so hot outside. You guys are aware of this. You know the deal. Those old leaky windows are producing unnecessarily high energy bills. That was the case at my place until I called Window Nation. They lowered those energy bills. I pay less now than I did before, and it's thanks to Window Nation. Also got a tax credit, and I save money every year and increase the value of the home. Window Nation GP is the best.
They've always been great. They were great when they brought windows to my house and installed them room to room so they didn't disrupt me. They were great when they put doors on the front and back of my house to make it more aesthetically pleasing, to keep some air in, to lower my energy bills, and to get me a tax credit. Love Window Nation. I love their deal right now. Buy one window, get one free with no limit. So as many as you buy, you're going to get that many free. Plus, you're going to get 0, 0, 0. Zero down payment, zero interest, and zero payments for 24 full months. That's 2 years. Window Nation, what a deal.
866-90-NATION. 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. And when you go, and you got to go soon, because sale ends July 31st, you got to tell them, Grant Nation.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.